South.
It is time.
Check it out, y'all.
You are now about to witness.
And it goes a little something like this.
Alexander Ovechkin, curl and drag to the back end. He scores! Simply sensational! Brodeur looking for the goal. Down the ice. Score! Brodeur!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to another edition of the Game Time Decision Podcast. I'm your host, Colton Prell. Joining me as always, Nick Sege and Graham Anderson, guys. Fantastic to have you on. I am so excited to talk about hockey today. We're all postseason. All postseason, at least for the start of this. And let's start it off with the crazy Atlantic Division. Just about every team not named the Red Wings, sorry, Nicholas, is in the running for a postseason spot in that division. He shrugs. What are you going to do about it? They've been terrible.
Hey, the point 0.2%. Yeah. 0.2.
Yeah, you and Jim Benning are on the same hype train, all right? It's a crazy division. Anybody can make it. Let's start with the bubble teams, though. Leafs, Islanders, Lightning even, Florida. Like, this is... anyone can make it. Who are your two teams that you think are going to make it, and why? You know, what are some insights here?
I want to say one of the two is going to be Florida. Because I think they just have a more all-encompassing team there. I think Luongo is a good veteran goalie. I think Reimer, when he's been playing out there, is playing really well from what I've seen. So I think that's a good combination to have, especially if you're going to go deep. Obviously Luongo's going to start most of those games, but if you have 6-7 game series and that's multiple series, and now you're in round two and you've already played your 12th game, Reimer's going to get some time in that. Like, that, even though you're going to have a day off between games, he's going to start one or two of those games. So I think that's important for the Panthers there. They have that combination of veteran talent, Jagr, who has enough, he's played enough seasons for five veterans, let alone just him on his own. And then they also got that spark with Huberto and Barkov coming back. So I just think they got all the pieces there to play well and make a push for that. I'm not sure who the second one's going to be. The thing with the wild card is probably the Rangers, or Rangers are going to get one of those two. If not, Columbus will get the other one, kind of thing, because they're going to fight for that third spot in their division. And then whoever doesn't get the third spot would get the other wild card spot. So as nice as it would be to see the Leafs or the Islanders in there, I just think of the four teams you just mentioned, Colton, with the Lightning as the other one, I think Florida has the most well-rounded team.
Yeah, like the two spots that are up for grabs are third in the Atlantic and the last wild card spot. Realistically, you're not touching the Rangers, who have more points than the Atlantic Division leading Habs. And unless Ottawa falls off, I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm going to go back with my initial predictions at the start of the season and say Florida and Tampa Bay. Now that they're bouncing back, I don't know if the Leafs have it in them. I mean, they're a good hockey team, but their play as of late has been bad. They have a hard time holding on to leads, which leads me to believe that they need to improve under pressure. And the rest of the season is going to be full of pressure. If they want to make it. So I'm going to go with Florida and Tampa. The Islanders, I don't know. I don't have much faith in the Islanders, if I'm being honest.
They're an interesting team for me, because their shots against rate has, like, it was awful at the start of the year, and it's just plummeted recently. And their shots for rate has been fairly constant. So, like, statistically, they have been improving. I just, like... I don't know. Are they really that good? I don't believe in them.
No, I don't either. Like, I don't think Tavares is as... I don't want to say Tavares is one of the most overrated players in the league, because that wouldn't be fair to him. But I don't think he's as good as the other elite players in this division that lead their teams. You know, he's not a Kucherov. He's not that type of a player. He's good, and he's their best player by far. but I, again, I'm not using the word overrated because he's not overrated. He's a great hockey player. I'm not sure if he needs something like, I hate comparing Crosby and Malkin and using them as the comparison, but that's what he needs. I'm not saying Tavares is the Crosby and Tavares needs a Malkin. But he needs somebody who's just as good. And I mean that. I think Malkin is just as good as Crosby. He needs somebody else like that. And I just don't think the Islanders have that yet. And when you look at the Leafs, like talking about holding leads and stuff, like Nick was saying there, they have 14 overtime losses. Like that's three times more than Chicago. Chicago has 5. I know, completely different division, completely different conference, but just in comparison, if you're a team that wants to make the playoffs and actually like drive for it, well, you have 3 times the amount of overtime losses. So anytime you get to a third period and it's a tie game, well, you might as well just give the other team the win now. Like, don't even play overtime because the Leafs are just going to lose anyway with how their season has gone. And I think they're also still young. Like, I think that sometimes gets forgotten maybe a little bit is, like, look at their team. It's a bunch of rookies with JVR and Bozak. And then, yeah, sure, throw in some other names. But really, and the two guys I just mentioned are talked about being traded all the time this offseason. So, really, you know, Matthews is great. Marner's been hurt, and I think you see how important he is to that line kind of idea. So I just think the Leafs quite aren't there yet because those high-pressure situations, when you do have a tight game in the third, they statistically, looking at their record, they haven't been able to get past that.
Yeah, it's interesting. We were saying before the show, the Leafs are like 1-8 in the shootout. And I think it's interesting because these kids are so good at hockey. And when you watch them play during the game, they have such good hands and they hold on to the puck. But when it gets to the shootout and there's no obstacle between them and the net, except for the goalie, I guess, they're not able to close it out.
I don't know what that is, because it's like you said, like, these teams are fantastic. You can't fault these teams. Is it Frederik Andersen? Is he the issue? I don't know. He was 3-4 in the shootout last year. Well, Anaheim was 3-4. So you look at that, you say Anderson's probably not that big of an issue. It's pretty high level analysis there, but I struggle to think that he's the problem.
Wow.
I think the kids just get too fancy in the shootout. I think they just try to do too many things, right? Like they got the entire, I mean, problem is, you, not problem, but for them, I guess it's a problem. You play for arguably the most hockey influenced team in the league, right? Like, everybody knows about the Leafs. Austin Matthews can't wipe his ass without somebody knowing about it. Like, that's just the reality of being a Maple Leafs player. Now when you're in a shootout situation, everybody's watching you. There's nobody else on the ice. There's you and the goalie. And I think they're young and they don't have that experience yet in a lot of shootout situations that they just try to do too much.
That's fair. I would love to see shootout stats on any NHL site. Like, just to know how good these people actually are.
Yeah, I also think the shootout's a bit of a crapshoot too. Like, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of the shootout.
I don't like it. I think there's definitely talent to it. Yeah, we saw a guy like, come on now. He's a Leaf. He's like 6-for-7, 2-for-3 on his career. I'm blanking on his name now. It is JVR. Right? JVR comes down, does that little chip backhand and then instant wrist shot. I'm thinking of JVR, right?
I think so.
Okay.
Something JVR would do.
It's like the same move every time, and he just fires it off so quickly and it works. And, you know, having a good shootout player is important. I think it's more important in today's league than having, you know, a penalty kill specialist. I should say that it's differently than having a 7th penalty kill specialist who is your fringe 4th line guy who maybe doesn't get all the ice time he deserves. Like, you know, if you're signing a Chris Kelly, for example, versus a Sam Gagner or, you know, someone who's just, not a great player, not a great skater, but you know what? They've got hands and they can score in the shootout. Like, to me, that's a much better use of, you know, $900,000, $800,000, whatever you're going to pay them, than signing that extra penalty killer who might be okay defensively, but really is up there aging and doesn't offer too much at 5-on-5. You know, both of those guys aren't going to play a ton, but the one guy might save you a couple points. But I think the real thing to me is I got to circle back on one thing. First, John Tavares is fantastic. You're underrating him. He's just saddled with terrible players. You know, that guy was incredible. He's been an Art Ross contender numerous times. I'm pretty sure he won the 1 year. No, Jamie Benn stole it on the final day. But that's
what I meant. Like, I was not saying he's not great. I'm saying exactly what you said. He's riddled with not great talent around him. If he had somebody to compliment him, that what I just said would be completely no. I would never say it.
Yeah,
but he doesn't have another person with him.
Yeah, and that's on Garce Snow. For me, when I look at this division, and I'm surprised neither of you guys gave him much love, and maybe it's because they have a couple games in hand on Ottawa, one in hand on Toronto, Florida, Tampa, is Boston. 8-2-0 in their last 10. Yeah, this team is, they're cruising. They are fancy stat darlings over the entire season. They hadn't been able to buy a goal. Suddenly, they're finding him in buckets. For me, this team is scary to run into in the postseason. You know, they can be good. I don't love their defense. Rask is a good goalie, and they've got Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, who will dummy you at any opportunity that they can. You know, that is a team who I think can, at the very least, contend with the entire Atlantic and some of the Metro.
Yeah, I just hate Boston.
I do too. I'm with you.
I know it's not reasonable. I don't like the Bruins. But you're right, and we've been saying it all season, like, the goals will come. The goals will come. They're having bad luck. And the goals are coming, and they're doing better. Much better.
They have the second highest goal differential in the Atlantic. It's only plus 10, and that says something more about the division than it does the teams in them. But still, you know, that usually that's a good sign of how a team is doing.
Well, going off of that, like, Florida is a minus 18 goal differential, and Toronto is a plus 1. Yet, from what the sounds of what Nick and I were saying, we would take Florida to grab that wild card spot over Toronto. So, but yet Toronto's a plus 1, Florida's a minus 18 goal differential. So,
I like Toronto. I could see Toronto, and I would go Toronto and Boston. I think those are the two teams that I would have taking it. If not Toronto, Tampa Bay. I don't think the Panthers are going to get it this year. They're inconsistent. I like them. I don't think they're fantastic. I think this is right about where they should be. You know, a bubble team, but, you know, in a good year, not this year. I'm just not convinced. Toronto has awesome territorial play. They've got four of the top scoring rookies all on the same team. You know, and these are guys who aren't just like, oh yeah, they're scoring well for a rookie. It's like, yeah, they're scoring well for any player in the league. You know, these guys are, are top 50 point getters. And so there's a lot of talent on that team, and I'm not a firm believer that you have to, you know, win 1-0 games, 2-1 games to succeed in the playoffs. You know, Pittsburgh only won 3 games in their entire cup run last year where they didn't score 3 or more goals. You know, and that's impressive in my mind. You know, these are games where they're winning 5-2, 4-3, 6-2, 6-1. You know, if you can do that offensively in the postseason, and I really believe the Leafs can. I think they have the talent to do that. I think you can succeed. The issue for me is that, you know, you're throwing out Jake Gardner on your second pairing versus Morgan Rielly and Zaitsev as your top two. You know, that's not a first pairing defense. You know, Matt Hunwick, Roman Polak, you know, those guys aren't going to do any favors in the postseason. Those are guys that shouldn't really see the ice. And so my concern would be they would get exposed early on. Just, you know, you run into a good team and they just roll you because you've got no defensive support. Like, don't get me wrong, Morgan Riley's great in the offensive zone, but I think Morgan Rielly is what people think Erik Karlsson is, not necessarily what he isn't. You know, he is a guy who literally has not improved defensively since he entered the league. And yeah, he's great offensively, but at some point you got to ask, all right, like, look, you're 24 years old now, I think, maybe 23. are you going to grow, or is this what you are? Because if this is what he is, he's not a top pairing defenseman, and that's not a guy that can lead a team deep into the playoffs, especially when he's saddled next to a Zaitsev.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're bang on there. That's Toronto's downfall, is their defense and probably a little bit their goaltending. But that's why they're not going to be winning games 1-0 and 2-1. Like, they have more goals against than any other team in the Atlantic.
That's the thing, right? Like, Toronto can go and score 5 goals, but the other team's probably going to score 3 or 4, because Frederik Andersen is good, not a playoff goalie that's going to take you anywhere, right? Like, Toronto can score as much as they want, but Andersen will let in 3 or 4 a night too. That's a problem.
Anderson's been good the second half of the season, though. Like, don't get me wrong, he was terrible to start, and I'm not defending that, but he's been good recently. I don't think he's the issue. You know, I think I honestly believe in Andersen. They found their goalie for the next, you know, couple of years. This is the goalie that'll grow up with that core, I believe.
Well, and by me saying he's going to let in 4, I'm not saying that off of him. I'm saying the poor defense ahead of him.
And that's fair. That's very fair.
Letting in 4 goals because they're getting way too many scoring opportunities, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I think we agree then that one of the two Florida teams looks dangerous, although we disagree on which. Not much faith in New York, not a ton of faith in Toronto, and I'm the lone man in Beantown.
Yeah.
All right, so we're basically as conclusive as the actual Atlantic Division then. All right, let's talk about something we can agree on then. Who are the top teams in this division? You're narrowing it down, 3 teams, each division. Each conference, I should say, that are going to make the Stanley Cup, or that are your favorites for making the Stanley Cup. Graham, start us off. Who are your 3?
Yeah, well, since we're talking about the Atlantic, I'll stick in the East. So I've narrowed it down to 3 in the West too, but we'll start in the East. One of these 3 teams is going to represent the East in the Stanley Cup final. It's either going to be Montreal, Washington, or Pittsburgh. It's going to be one of those 3 teams. I don't see anybody else getting past any of them. I'll tell you why I don't think Columbus will, after you two want to throw in your 2 cents, but I think it's going to be one of those 3 teams. I'm leaning towards, if I were to rank that 3, I would probably say like Washington, Pittsburgh, Montreal, but it's going to be one of those 3.
Completely agree. So, and the only reason I say Montreal is because we're picking 3. Like, really, I think it's going to be either Washington or Pittsburgh, and I hope it's Washington.
I'll, you know what? I'm in B-10 already. Boston's my 3rd team. But I'm going Pittsburgh 1, Washington 2. Bruins surprise everybody.
If we have to watch that much Bruins hockey this postseason, I might not watch hockey.
Oh my god, if it gives Bruce Cassidy a full-time job, like as a permanent head coach though, I will love it. Because he's terrible. I'm not a Bruce Cassidy fan.
I think that's what makes it... I think that's what makes it so interesting too, is like, we're all pretty much in agreement that it's most likely that the representative from the Eastern Conference is coming from the Metro, either being Washington or Pittsburgh. Is Shattenkirk enough now for Washington to finally get there? I don't know.
Oh my gosh, I hope he signs there. He's been phenomenal.
But I think the one team I've left out deliberately, and I'm thinking you two will agree with me, is Columbus. Like, their record is 41-17-6. Very good record. But that win streak has overshadowed how poorly they've played as of late.
Yeah.
Since the beginning of February till now, they've gone 8-5-2. But half of those wins were by single goals. Like, they weren't having 5-1 blowouts. I think they had one game where it was like 6-0 or something ridiculous. But outside of that, half of their wins were by a goal. 8-5-2 is not horrible, but it's not great. And I just think that's why Columbus, you know, that win streak is probably going to allow them to hold on to a playoff spot. But if they continue to play this way, it's going to be a first-round exit.
Easy. Yeah, they have not been world beaters down the stretch. The team that I thought you were going to go with for me was the Rangers. Because I think they are the 3rd best team in the East. And I think they would surprise some people. The issue is, like, they're going to have to play either Montreal or Washington at this rate. And it's looking like Montreal right now. At some point then, they're making it into either the Atlantic or the Metro, depending on how that shakes up. They're just going to run into good teams. So if the Rangers get matched up against Montreal, I think that's best for them. because then at least you're in the Atlantic side of things, and you can make some headway. And if that's what happens, then I'm going with them because I think they're phenomenal. I think they're gonna shock some people.
You think Henrik can win them a cup, though? You think
I don't think he can win them a cup, but I think he can at least get them in a couple rounds. The issue for me is if they have to go through the Metro, you know, if things shake up differently, say they bump up into third, or, you know, I don't know, Washington trails off and Montreal takes the East lead, and New York has to go through the Metro, I think that's where they run into problems, because that division is unfortunately going to take a cup contender out of contention in the first or second round. Which is a shame, and not how the playoffs should work, but welcome to the NHL.
Well, I think it'll come down to Washington-Pittsburgh in the conference final, ultimately. Again, depending on how all the matchups go in the first few round, in the first couple rounds, we'll see. Have to see how that goes. But, I mean, if it does get down to Washington-Pittsburgh, I'm okay with that. I'm not a Dynasty fan, so, you know, saying I'm okay with it coming down to that and I'm not a Dynasty fan in the same breath is kind of, like, extremely controversial and not even remotely on the same page, but it's more like that I'm sick of the whole Crosby Ovechkin talk. Like, it's just like I'm done with it. Like, if they can get to that conference final and that isn't something that's discussed night in, night out, then I'll love it. It's just like there's other things to discuss with this. There's other matchups. Like, can we finally move on from, like, can we talk about Shattenkirk and how maybe he's finally the defensive player that can get Washington there? I think that's what it'll come down to. But then if all they do is beat the Crosby Ovechkin thing to death again, I'll be like, think of something else to talk about. Like, this is ridiculous.
I thought Washington was going to win the Stanley Cup last. Oh, no, wait. I had them going to the Cup Finals last year. I just thought they were the best team in the NHL last year, and they didn't make it past the second round. So my gut is telling me that Washington's going to take the East, but I don't know. And I guess that's the beauty of the playoffs too. I mean, I had St. Louis winning the cup last year and that didn't go my way either, but I feel like Pittsburgh has the experience to go, but I want Washington to win. So I don't know.
Fair. Fair. You guys want to move to the West?
Yeah. They say, well,
oh yeah.
First of all, once they get there, then they got to beat the guys in the West. And the three teams I have in the West is going to be biased opinion, but I don't think ridiculous. Minnesota is one of the three. Chicago and San Jose would be my top three in the West. Would be either Minnesota, Chicago, or San Jose. One of those three teams. In a perfect world, obviously, for me, Minnesota would be the team to get there. In probably a more realistic, pulling my head out of my ass world, it's probably going to be Chicago or San Jose. But it would be one of those three teams for the West.
Interesting. No love for Nashville?
Nope, and I'll tell you why in a second. I'll let you guys go for a little bit.
Nick, who you got?
I would go Chicago, San Jose, and Minnesota.
Yay!
Oh, wow, you.
I'm on board.
I'm just looking at the standings right now, and I'm like, part of me wants to say Anaheim, but I don't think they can do it all the way. I don't think they can take it that far.
No, I don't have faith in Anaheim.
It's and Edmonton, team, they don't have the experience yet.
And they're terrible without McDavid on the ice.
Yeah.
I'm going Minnesota, Nashville, San Jose.
You're going Nashville.
Going Nashville.
Over Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Over Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this will be good. Let me get my popcorn while you two talk this out.
I'm going over right, Chicago because one, Corey Crawford and Scott Darling.
You're only listening because right now Colton's going to pull his head out of his own ass.
No. Here's the thing. Corey Crawford and Scott Darling cannot continue to be this incredible forever. One. Two, Victor Arvidsson, Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg is the best line in hockey, in my opinion. And yeah, there, I think that line alone is going to be enough. Combine that with the defensive core. I don't like Chicago's defensive depth, especially in the playoffs. You're going to have to rely on a very old Duncan Keith, an incredibly old Brent Seabrook. I just don't enjoy it. I don't think they're going to play soup a ton. Brian Campbell, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the nickname, I don't know why you would be, but whatever. I don't think he'll get the minutes that he needs to succeed. I think of any team, I really think that Nashville could shut down the Panarin-Kane line. Panarin-Kane and Nisimov. I think they have the defense capable of shutting down those three, and I think if you're able to do that, Chicago doesn't have a lot more to offer, especially this year. So for me, I think Nashville has the capability and the depth to shut down a Chicago, and that's why I don't trust them.
When I look at Nashville, I'll agree they have extreme defensive depth with Josi, Subban, the names go on. Like they're probably they probably have the deepest blue line core in any team, and I would say that like as an offensive threat as well. Really, you could take any of their top four defensemen and put them on the power play, and they'll probably do something. Like they're all point guys, not like Brent Burns point guys, but guys that will show up on the stat sheet. So I'll agree with you there. Also agree that they do have an amazing first line. After that, it really peters off because you have all of your top point guys playing on a line together. So of course they're all going to have big point guys because chances are one gets the goal, the other two get the assist. Like it's simple to do it that way, right? I'm not saying they don't have guys in their other lines that will produce, but after those three, it then becomes Josi, Subban. Like they're your big point guys. Now you're looking at the blue line.
I'll give you that.
So I think that's kind of where it's going to be, where the matchups in Chicago or if that is who they play, and on other teams where their third line compared, you know, you're looking at the third line of Minnesota against the third line of Nashville, and I think on paper it's going to be like, wow, yeah, you look at the third and fourth line of Nashville, and
well, you're not accounting for James Neal, third line all-star. Yeah, okay. I'm serious. He's playing on the third line. I don't get it, but he is there.
Yeah. The other thing with Nashville, too, is like playing in the Central, it's such a two-team division this year. It's either going to be Minnesota or Chicago that win that. They're going to go back and forth now through the end of the season, kind of thing. And like Nashville's third in the Central, Chicago's second with 89 points, Nashville's third with 73 points. Like there's a 16-point separation from second to third place in that. So that's crazy as far as I'm concerned.
I just can't believe Chicago. They've won seven in a row. Like, can we admit this is just a really hot team at the moment?
Who, Chicago or Nashville?
Chicago. I mean, that entire point difference is off of one streak right now.
Well, yeah, I know, of course. Yeah, they're extremely hot, but this is the time of the year where you want to be a hot team.
I agree, right? But like, do you think it lasts? I mean, like, if they peter out...
They're going to lose again before the playoffs. They're not going to go into the whole season. But, like... And like, and when you look at that, like when I looked at Nashville's record starting 1st of February till now, they're 8-6-1. Again, like just like Columbus, they've been a 500 team the last 5 weeks. And again, half of their wins were by a goal. So like Nashville's coasting.
What concerns me is Chicago has been,
and they're not trying. But I just think, again, I think they can do something. I don't think they're going to get past. Again, I'm extremely biased, and I like of the three of us being a guy who has a team that's like, no, yeah, his team's actually legit out of the three of us.
whoa, hold on. The Sens are legit.
Okay.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay,
that's my thing. And when it comes to Anaheim, you know, going off of what we're talking about with the Leafs and all their overtime losses and stuff, Anaheim's got 10 OT losses. I just don't think they're going to be able
Randy
to,
Carlisle you know, team. They're not going to do anything.
Close game. Yeah.
Okay. So now that I've heard both of your arguments, I think that I agree with you, Colton, in the sense that the Blackhawks, their window's closing. Their core players are aging. So that window's closing. I think it'll be open for this year.
I also
think that Nashville, the pieces are in place. They're just not put together yet, and they'll get there. So these guys might flip next year, but I don't think this is the year it happens.
That's a logical and fair take. And yeah, I resent your callousness. I was really hoping for some emotional fire. You know, come down. Brent Seabrook is garbage. Dude's on a leg and a half. I can get it.
You know,
whatever.
You know, in the long run, both the Sens and the Wild are going to be swept in the first round, and we'll both be pissed.
Not if Ottawa draws the Leafs. You kidding me? Seven-game series, Battle of Ontario. Bring it back. We've got some revenge to take.
That series would actually be so good.
That's the only thing I'm looking forward to. I think if we run into Boston, actually, if we run into Boston, I can see the Sens doing kind of okay, just because they seem to be getting the better of them this year. Through pure happenstance, don't get me wrong, but they do seem to be getting the better of them. So you never know. Maybe a mental aspect there helps them out.
Well, how's the Sens' injury situation these days? Is it better?
Kyle Turris is playing with an literally exploded finger. He gets it frozen each night. Hoffman and Stone are both banged up. You know, it's the playoffs coming up. Everyone's got bumps and bruises, but we're basically missing our number one center.
If you're listening, I just want to prove how awesome hockey is. Colin literally just said, Kyle Turris is playing with an exploded finger. What other sport do you hear a guy goes, yeah, I have an exploded finger, I'm lacing him up. Like,
and he's been doing it for like a week and a half now, maybe more.
Sport out there where a guy could play with an exploded finger. Like, that just sounds awesome.
I don't think Kyle would tell you it's awesome, but, you know, to each his own.
So dramatic.
I know, right? Exploded finger. Like, what? Oh, yeah.
What happened to your finger? It exploded.
It's basically in pieces. They just got a big thing of gauze. They stick the needle in. Yeah. Doctor can't see what he's doing.
Oh, I love hockey.
I'm pretty sure we've beat this topic to death, but I don't really want to move on quite yet because I'm enjoying the Sens talk. We just never get it. So, you know, got to get it out while I can.
Yeah.
And I think that's the interesting thing is we've all talked about the teams that we're going to get in there. Nobody's mentioned Ottawa, and Colton's like, hey, Ottawa, right, exploded finger for tourists. That'll get talked about.
I keep seeing reporters being like, hey, you know, I was speaking to some GMs, and they say they're worried about the Sens. And my first thought when I hear that is like, which GMs are those? Because if I'm a GM, I'm trading with them because they clearly don't know what's going on. Like, Ottawa's not dangerous. You look at the teams in the East, like, they're probably the weakest one in the Atlantic. Hey, Montreal has Price, who can steal a game. Anderson's played well, don't get me wrong, but I'll take Pacioretty over Hoffman. Well, probably not, but I like Pacioretty. Gallagher's fantastic when he scores. He's been cold recently. Radulov can go off at any time. You know, Galchenyuk is not exactly the first-line center you want to run into if you're another teammate. They've got the pieces in place. Shea Weber will break one of your players guaranteed in a 7-game series. You know, whether that's shot blocking or just murdering, it's going to happen. Yeah.
I think it's so interesting too, like just looking at how the standings are right now and how things might shake up. Like last year, there wasn't a single Canadian team represented at all in the playoffs. And this year, we could have Montreal, Ottawa, Edmonton, Calgary, and possibly Toronto. Like we could have every team but Winnipeg.
Really? And Vancouver is a team too.
But we want to sell them to Seattle.
Hold on. Winnipeg's only 3 points out right now. Are you writing them off?
Yes, they're trash.
I don't think they have enough. I mean, Scheifele and Laine are a great 1-2 combination. Don't get me wrong. They're fantastic. I mean, I think Laine's got a great shot at the Calder, of course, and Scheifele's been playing well. But again, the pieces are starting to come. I think it's kind of like Nashville's at step 3 of 5 and Washington's at like step 2 and Winnipeg's at step 2. Sorry.
Haven't you listened to Kevin Cheveleoff though? He had a 5-year plan. Okay. 5 years in, they accidentally tanked into Line A, but you know what? That's a plan.
So hold on. If you take out whatever goalie's playing for Winnipeg right now, I feel like it's been a revolving door.
And you put Pavlak or Hellebuck or whoever.
They yeah, are. And you or Hutchinson or someone.
It's Hellebuck.
And you drop in Marc-Andre Fleury.
No,
it doesn't. Do you change your mind?
It doesn't help.
No.
So goaltending is not the problem.
Well, it's been part of the problem, but it's not all the problem. I think the biggest change that needs to happen there is Pomo needs to go. I don't like Paul Maurice.
Oh, yeah.
He's taken like 3 teams just to the playoffs in his like 10-year tenure as a coach. Something stupid like that. Like, he's just not good.
I think that's the different mindset too with a lot of teams now is it's not like making the playoffs isn't the goal anymore. It's like we don't just want to get in. We want to get in and go places.
But you're not from Ottawa.
Like, I mean, and that's the nice thing when you look at like recently enough with the Kings being the 8th seed and then they went and won the cup. It's like, you know, those wild card teams can surprise you. I mean, as dominant as Washington and Pittsburgh are, and Montreal, I guess, just bring them back. As dominant as those two are, and most likely that's what the conference final will come down to, you can't completely write off the wildcard teams. Like, I mean, they still got to win 12 games.
Yeah, but the issue with that is that the Kings then were, like, one of the best territorial teams we've seen in the past decade. Like, that Kings team, regardless of record, was one of the best teams we've seen in the NHL recently. And they were incredibly dominant, and Jonathan Quick got hot when it mattered, and he did enough to be elite, apparently, and they won. Like, that win, I think, has been so detrimental to small budget teams. Like, Eugene Melnyk is now all about, like, hey, just make the playoffs, baby. Anything can happen. LA won the cup. Well, LA won the cup because they were good, Huge. Like, get a good team and get in the playoffs, and yeah, anything can happen, but anything can't just happen as a wild card team. And while I'm with you that you can't just write them off, I think you can definitely get a good indication of which teams are actually dangerous. And, you know, you look at it this year, the Rangers are that wild card team that's actually dangerous. The Blues, I guess, are that wild card team that's, you know, fairly dangerous. And if the Kings get a wild card spot.
No. Really? You're still saying the Blues are dangerous?
Well, if you're Edmonton or Anaheim, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Not if you're Minnesota, Chicago, Nashville, or San Jose, but, you know.
But the Woodstock Navy Vets would be dangerous against the Anaheim Ducks. That's my little hometown. That's like a junior age. Like, look it up if you want.
I think if the Kings make it, they're legit dangerous, though.
I don't think the Blues are legit anymore. I mean, I don't want to say they just threw in the towel, but when you trade Shattenkirk, I know he's penny free agent.
Oh, yeah. No, the Blues aren't legit. But no, they would scare me more than Edmonton.
Yeah, get some for you now. Like, to me, that's like white flag. If we get in, we're getting our asses whipped anyway, so we might as well get something for them while we can.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I think if LA makes it, though, they can at least hold their own for a series or two.
I like it when LA makes it, because Jake Muzzin's from Woodstock. He's from my little hometown. I went to high school with him. So whenever I like King, I'm like, hey, sweet. Brings a cup to Krabby Joe's in Woodstock. It's all
good. He's also just a fantastic defender.
Well, he is. Like, and I always try to – I don't try to defend him. But I, like, you know, when I talk to other people, it's like, well, Drew Doughty did it. And I'm like, yeah, but look at this Jake Muzzin kid. Like, he's, you know, he's a pretty solid defenseman. I know Doughty gets all the credit of the blue on the blue line for the Kings, but watch this kid.
I am firmly behind Jake Muzzin was the better partner in the Doughty-Muzzin partnership. He might not be as dynamic, but I think he does more to affect winning. You know, Doughty can break a game, but over the course of 60 minutes, I think Jake Muzzin gives you a better shot at winning.
Didn't Muzzin play for Team Canada?
Yeah,
at the World
Championship,
yeah, did,
or
right?
World Cup, or one of those.
Yeah.
One of the ones that's not the Olympics.
More often than not. I don't know why, but he was.
Yeah. All right, here's a topic that I wanted to discuss with you guys, which is, it's been bugging me recently. It's hockey culture. And it's all about Josh Hosang and wearing Lemieux's jersey number as homage. And there was a piece that came out on Lighthouse Hockey. It was a satirical piece, and they joked about, you know, he can't wear this number because it's Lemieux, and they're going to retire it in front of the whole league, so nobody can wear it. And the only favorite numbers you can have and wear are, you know, Hasek and Yzerman and Orr and Béliveau, and you can wear all those, but you can't wear 99, and you can't wear 66. And, you know, it's a joke, and it was funny, and it was a well-written piece. But that piece came out after some real criticism that actually happened. I mean, and people were legit upset that this kid would consider wearing Mario Lemieux's number. I want to get your opinions on that, because that's something that bugs the crap out of me, because I feel like that in particular is a hockey thing. You know, hockey has so many little minute traditions, and you got to honor and respect the old timers. And it's like, come on, you know, you can't over celebrate your goals, or you have to, you know, be polite and be gentlemanly. It's like, these guys are world-class athletes. Let them, and they're kids too, for the most part. You know, these are young guys. Like, let them celebrate. Let them pay homage to their idols. Let them be kids playing a game. You know, that part of hockey culture, I just frustrates me so much.
Yeah, I agree. I wish I had a more fired up response for you to really make this a dramatic exchange, but I really don't care that he wore Mario Lemieux's number, if he did or if he didn't. Like, Who cares? Did he like him? That's the reason I wear number 19 in beer league, because Steve Yzerman was my favorite player growing up.
Yeah.
Like, well, I don't see anything wrong with that.
I don't either. I mean, a number is just a number, but like, obviously there's going to be some people that are going to be pissed by it. Other people are like, yeah, who cares? I mean, really, and from what I understand, Lemieux's not a cocky, chauvinistic, that's my number, how dare you wear it kind of a guy. Like, I don't even think he would give a crap. You know,
who's saying even said if Lemieux asked me not to wear it, I wouldn't wear it?
No, exactly. And that's just a respect thing you would do, right? Like, I know the history of the, you know, I think if you're a player, if you're a kid who wants to wear that number, you wear it because you know the history behind that number. You know the player that wore that number, the impact that that number has on the hockey culture of that team or of that city or whatever. So you would just flat out, you know, like, I'm assuming Hosang would go to, hey, I want to wear your number. You would go, awesome, and okay, done. Like, why is this now a big issue? Like, it doesn't matter as far as I'm concerned. And I mean, and if it was going to be like, oh, well, we're eventually going to retire 66 for the league, well, then what's eventually going to happen? Like, are you eventually going to retire Crosby's number and then McDavid's number and then Bobby Orr's number? Like, why haven't all these numbers been retired?
That's the
and
bigger
eventually
thing.
You're eventually going to have players wearing, like, bingo numbers, right? We got B6, we got I-17, we got O-62. Like, you know, that's the stupid thing of it is, like, eventually, like, you can't just retire numbers. Just, I mean, I get why teams do it. Like, there's tons of teams out there that this team has retired that number. And if that's the case, then, okay, obviously, that's great. But when it comes down to it, if you haven't retired that number as your team, a young kid wants to wear it, he's had a chat with the origin of that number, and the guy goes, sure, done. Who cares?
Even if the team has retired it, like, it doesn't matter. If you can wear Bobby Orr's number, arguably the greatest player to ever live, I don't personally believe so, but I know people who make that argument. You can wear Mario's number. You can wear Lemieux's, or not Lemieux, Lindros's number. You know, you can wear big, famous numbers as long as they're not 99. And there should be no issue with that.
If you wear that big, famous number, that just puts pressure on yourself.
Yeah. That's true. Anything else. I just feel like, you know, the reason that they retire numbers or don't wear them anymore is out of respect or out of homage for these stars. And, like, what better way to pay respect to or pay homage to these people than to wear their number?
I'm with proudly. You on that. I mean, I'm 100% with you on that.
Like, right? So, like, even that teams don't do it. I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird thing.
No disrespect to Josh Hosang, but who does he play for?
Islanders.
Where does he come from? Like, honestly, like, I mean, it's not like he's like the next Patrick Laine who wants to wear 66, right? It's just like, I couldn't tell you who this kid is.
He's got a lot of talent. He had some attitude issues. Well, yeah. And he got cut from the Islanders last year because he missed training. But
Sabres organization? Is that what I heard you say, Colton?
Islanders.
Islanders. Oh, well.
Damn. He's got talent, though. He's got lots of talent.
Yeah, he's really good at sleeping in.
That too. He's got sense of humor.
Okay. Now that you say sleeping in, now that, I mean, unfortunately, that's what jogged my memory with Hosang saying, oh yeah, the guy who slept in and missed it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and I think it's different. Like, he plays for the Islanders. 66 has no meaning to the Islanders.
That's just it.
If you want to wear 66 and you're playing for the Penguins, you're probably stupid. But
yeah.
If you want to go and wear it for a team that has no affiliation with the guy, then you're scared.
Yeah, but and I think what you're trying to get at, Colton, is this whole idea of, like, in hockey culture, this, like, respect of your elders and, like, being like having class, and what does that mean and why do we do it?
Yeah, like, right? We're so focused on not offending anybody, you know? Like, PK is ostracized for celebrating because he might offend someone. Dude, I want him doing laps around the ice backflipping. Like, let me see what you got.
Yes, and it's like a high emotion game, so I'm totally fine with showing some emotions. I think where I start to have an issue with it is if it's like 6-1 or 7-1 and these guys are hot dogging, right? That's where it becomes problematic, and I wonder if that's almost where it started.
But I think at that point, like, the players know.
Yeah, right? You'd think.
Well, yeah, you would hope so. I mean, that's the thing, right? If you're up 5-0, like Winnipeg was the other night, and I'm going to segue around to this play because it's something that's been bothering me. I wanted to talk to you guys about too was with the stupid Blake Como play he made. clear break. I mean, no more better proof than Colorado's tanking. I'll get to that in a sec. But like, if it was flipped around and you're Winnipeg and you're up 5-0 and you score that, then like you should just calmly go to the bench, tap your hands, away you go. But if it's like a 3-2 game and there's a minute left and you score the goal to tie it up, you can ride that. You can ride that horse till the end of the game. That's a moment where, especially this time of year, where everything is like it's going to come down to a point, whether or not I got a wild card spot, the third spot in the division, or I'm on the golf course.
Like, yeah,
those moments allow you to do that.
For sure. But
before we eviscerate Como, because we will eviscerate Como, can we all agree this was 100% the case of Jets defender calling out behind you saying, I'm here, drop it. Him doing a quick shoulder check, seeing white and just dropping the puck. Like that has to be what happened, right? There's no way. It's still stupid decision. You're on a breakaway. Just shoot the damn puck. But like,
shoot the puck. Yeah.
To me, that's more crisis of confidence and mental state of the entire Avalanche organization in a single moment.
Absolutely. Just no coordination, no chemistry.
Yeah.
No one has any idea what's going on.
Like no belief that I can score. You know, someone else do this for me. And as a result, the greatest thing maybe in this decade of hockey. Wait, when was the empty net goal between Stars and Oilers? That was the year before Patrick Kane, right? That draft? To be 06?
I think I remember the player you're talking about.
Yeah. Patrick Nemeth, yeah, yes. Right? No, that's not it. Yeah, I think
that the guy who missed the empty net?
Yeah, I think that was 06, 07, right? Because that was the Patrick Kane draft. So, basically what I'm getting at is this is the best play since that.
Yeah. I'm watching this play, and I'm thinking, you're down 5-0 anyway. Like, even if you score this goal, 5-1 still looks horrible. So why are you stopping 3 feet in front of the net to pass when 7 out of 10 times that's a goal? And now you stop and pass it. I'm like, it's been obvious that you're tanking. Like this is a non brain scratching thing. It's blatantly obvious. But that play proves you don't want to win. Like winning is bad for you. Like you want to have the fewest amount of wins possible. You want there to be like the slimmest chance that anybody else could get that. What I'm going to love is when they get like the fourth overall pick. Like that's what's going to, I'm going to laugh my ass.
No, they've got first. At the very worst, they've got second. They've got a 20 point lead on being the worst team in the NHL.
No, but the thing that's got me so confused is like they're tanking, but they're tanking in a draft year where there's not a McDavid in it. Like if I'm a team, I only tank this bad when there's a McDavid-esque like player there. And from what I've read, from what I've talked with other people, from what I've seen, there isn't that kind of a guy available.
I'm pretty convinced the Avalanche aren't tanking that badly. I think they're just terrible. Like this is just a really bad team by all accounts. I don't think they're trying to lose that badly. Like I don't think Blake Como was like in the back of his mind like
that.
Can't get 2 points, can't score, gotta throw this one away.
But why did they not shoot the puck?
I really just think it's a mental state thing. Like, you know what? We're terrible. I don't have confidence. Partner's calling for the puck, let him shoot it.
Like the management of that team has been very vocal about how there's a fire sale in Colorado and we'll trade everyone except for Nathan MacKinnon.
Yeah.
And it's reported in the press, you know, local and national, all over hockey news and Twitter. Like you're seeing your bosses say this about you in public. Like I think it probably hurts a little bit for the players. It doesn't.
What does that do for MacKinnon confidence wise, right? I mean, like the similar thing. Edmonton is a bad example because they had the first overall pick for like Everson, but like if McKinnon's the only guy, like that, as I'm another player, if I'm Gabriel Landeskog or I'm Duchesne, I'm thinking, okay, so McKinnon's your cornerstone. You're like that. That's how I'm reading that. Is
right.
You can get rid of me. McKinnon's your guy, so you're building around him, and that put so much pressure on McKinnon. And I don't. McKinnon's great, a good player. I'm assuming he plays in a really crappy team, so he's not a very good player.
But
playing, yeah, he's a good player.
But that puts so much pressure on him, and I don't think he's. I don't know if he's a cornerstone player. Like, is McKinnon at the same level as a McDavid, as a Line A, as?
No, but those are generational players you're picking. Like McKinnon is an 18-year-old who came into the NHL and was one of the scoring race leaders. McKinnon is a cornerstone player. He is the guy you build your team around. He is a franchise player. Any of those tags, he fits the bill. He is the guy you build around. He can handle that pressure. I think it's fair and it's good talent evaluation that they aren't going to give him up. I think it is a bit of a shot to Duchesne and Landeskog that, hey, we're willing to trade you. I don't think they're anything particularly that special. You know, they're both phenomenal players. They're not a McKinnon. And as you know, that's just the way it is. But if I'm those two, then I'm asking for a trade. Because look, if you're willing to deal me, get me out of here. Because I don't need to be there.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm thinking. If you're going to want to build your team around McKinnon, you can't just have McKinnon, we'll draft a bunch of guys, because you're not going to be a free agent market. You're not going to get top-end free agents thinking, oh, yeah, I've played a bunch of seasons in, I don't know, San Jose, or I've played a bunch of seasons in Pittsburgh, oh, go sign with Colorado. No, that's not going to happen. So you're not a top-end team for free agent markets. I don't know. I have no idea what their prospects are like. I have no idea if they have a deep prospects pool, if they got one or two guys that are ready to make the jump and are going to have a big impact. I have no idea there. But you're going to have to have guys next to McKinnon like your Landeskogs and Duchesnes who are very good. But if then you get rid of them, it's like, okay, McKinnon, we have nobody for you. You're on your own. That's essentially what that would do to him.
Think of the state of that locker room right now.
Oh, it's
that these guys are stuck playing out the rest of the season for a management that very bluntly said, we want to get rid of everybody, right? So, like, just think about that. Like, their practices are probably awful. It's probably awkward and quiet and negative in the room. Like, the fact that Como didn't even know that it wasn't his teammate calling to him for the pass. Like, that's just stuff that teammates know about each other. So, I don't know. I don't think the players are intentionally trying to throw the games and to throw the season. But I think that there's nothing they can do about it. They just, what's the point for them right now? Right? I don't know. It's very sad.
I'd agree with you. I don't think they're intentionally throwing it. I just think they're so messed in the brain right now. Like, they're so unfocused and so depressed up here, like in their heads, that they can't execute on the ice to anything.
Right.
So they're not intentionally throwing it, but you have to be mentally strong to play in the NHL, and they are so mentally weak right now that they can't execute. So it looks like they're throwing the season because they can't execute anything.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I mean, I don't think you can really dissect in the time we have left in this the ways the Avalanche are terrible. There's a lot to get into. And we can do a full episode on that in the future if you guys want. I don't think anybody really wants that, though. You know, like, if you're an Avalanche fan and you've made it this far into, one, an hour-long podcast, and two, it just more in general, this season, you deserve a medal. 60 games in, I am so given up. Like, I'm done after 19 of this season.
They've taken stocks in the Kleenex tissue industry already. They're cashing in.
The Colorado Sadvalanche, am I right?
Oh my god! Oh my! You're fired from everything.
Yeah, just ended on that. Yeah, I don't even want to say anything after that.
there's a title of the episode for you.
Colorado Sadvalanche. Nick's fired. Graham's also fired for encouraging Nick, and it's just me next episode. If you like what you heard, check That's out okay. the podcast.
No one's listening this far into it anyways.
No, it's true. It's true. All of our loyal listeners are like, oh my god, these guys are idiots. Gone after episode 4.
All 6 of them.
Oh, all right. If you like the podcast, check us out online, lastwordonhockey.com, on Twitter at GTD_podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes and SoundCloud. Just search Game Time Decision Podcast. Give us a like, share the episode, subscribe. Give us 5 stars, comment, rate, all of the things that I love and makes this podcast easier to find for other people so they can enjoy it too. If you liked us individually, you know, you want to check out Nick on Twitter at NickSega19, Graham at GHAM614, and Colton at ColtonPrail. Obviously, that's me. I referred to myself in the third person there. It's a little weird, but we're, whatever. Continuing the outro. That does it for this episode. We've got a cool analytics episode coming out on Wednesday with CKM Sports and Garrett Hole of HockeyGraphs.com. That'd be pretty nice. Get an agent's perspective on how they use hockey analytics. It's a pretty interesting conversation. I'm sure you will enjoy it. That's coming out on Wednesday. These regular episodes come out every Monday or Tuesday, depending on how quickly I edit them. We will see you next week.